This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not.
You hungry?
Hey, Ma! We get some meatloaf!
That's insane. You're absolutely insane. My palace,
the house isn't even a stained spread. It's
for shit.
Are you telling me?
For what?
I don't know what we're yelling about!
Now, if you don't think this is the greatest, I will fight you. That's no lie.
Can you clap for the killers?
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw them off the back.
One time for the killers.
Whoa.
Double up for them gangsters.
Just living the dream.
Hi, I'm Bill White, and welcome to Chicago Bulldog.
I gotta be honest, I come in, it's like a little like I'm trying to get my bearings, it's cartoons, your mom, and it's like, you still got it. It's living the dream, I love that.
Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joins the Bullseye. Tim, it's great to have you again. How you been, brother?
I'm doing well, Fred. A little disheartened by the Bulls' loss in Utah last night because that was a winnable game. You had the three-point lead a couple times in the closing minutes. You got to close it out.
I'd agree. I thought that, you know, with 13 seconds, I believe, on the clock, Hayward misses a free throw. Taj has to grab that rebound, and he let it slip off his hands out of bounds on the Bulls, and they blew a game they should have won. But big picture, Utah is 15-10 at home in the Western Conference. You know, I don't think we should act like they're the Lakers. They're not a terrible team.
Right. And, you know, I had them in that one of the last slots in the West in our preseason predictions, and I know they've not performed quite to that level, but especially at home. And, again, you look at the NBA box scores on any given night, and a lot of close games. A lot of teams, you know, even elite teams, struggling. You know, reference Golden State having a hard time putting Philly away the other day. And, you know, and they had big leads late in that game and still couldn't hold on against Philly, who, you know, up until recent weeks have been kind of a laughing stock of the league. So as we've talked about all season long, it's night in and night out a tough league. And just where the Bulls are bunched up with, you know, after Cleveland and Toronto, everyone's pretty well bunched up. You know, and again, other than Atlanta, you know, I would still take the Bulls roster over the rest of those teams that they're bunched up with. You know, Detroit, Indiana, even Miami, Boston. So, you know, obviously the injury issues are a big part of it. Now we're not going to see Noah for a while, and you know, especially seeing Rudy Gobert and DeAndre Jordan having a little too much fun around the rim. That's where you miss Noah, and giving Gasol a little backup in terms of rim protection. And really just team spirit, which seems to be missing a little bit too. Just watching the Bulls bench reactions, and I always look for all those little things. They just don't seem that inspired in terms of even the guys on the bench, right? You know, there's no Patty Mills towel waiver or anybody that seems to be really spirited on the bench. And I don't know if you can force that or create that if it's not there. It's kind of one of those things that's there or not. So that's a little concerning as well, but I saw Dunleavy just got an assignment to the D League to get his rehab going. So hopefully in the not too distant future, we'll get him back, get Nico back after the All-Star break. Cause you know, the depth lack of depth is really showing when you're having to start Etuan Moore and Snell has obviously fallen out of favor. So really need some help in those wing positions.
Yeah, the Bulls are clearly, to me, a shooter short. You know, they shot 21%, I believe, from three yesterday, and they just got basically McDermott, who's, you know, top 10 in three-point accuracy. But outside of him, that's why I think the team looks so much better than Dunleavy. In today's NBA, you really need to have that guy that can spread the floor and be a threat from the three-point line. They don't really have that. You know, I'd like your opinion on that.
I agree, and as we've also talked about quite a bit, where the league goes with these hybrid-type players, right? Gordon Hayward's a great example of that, right? What's his true position? You know, is he a two? Is he a three? Is he a four? You know, they'll even have him play some point forward as well. They're a really versatile player, and obviously someone like Dunleavy doesn't have the youth of Gordon Hayward, and he's not going to go dunking on anybody in the paint, but Dunleavy is, what, 6'9", 6'10"? Long wingspan, good shooter, veteran player, one of those interchangeable guys that can play multiple positions. So I think, especially the way things have been shifting in the league, having a guy with all the skill set that Dunleavy brings is definitely going to help. With Doug, you know, there's been flashes where, you know, again, I've always said he needs to get double figure shot attempts, even if he's forcing some and taking some bad shots. And, you know, there's been games where he's done that, but I still see his shot attempts under 10 most of the time, which, you know, I know he can't manufacture that many shots unless you're playing a bad team like the Lakers or something where he was getting off a little bit. But, yeah, I've been a little concerned that his production has slipped a little, but again, maybe without Nico and some other pieces there, that, you know, there's some components maybe that have helped McDermott have better games. I haven't studied that in depth in terms of who else is on the floor when he's been going off. But, you know, I still like his energy and the way he's running the court and, you know, overall aggressiveness. But still think he needs to get more shot attempts.
Yeah, and I still feel that he's not 100% healthy. He missed the game due to some knee issues, and he just doesn't seem like he's this level I thought for the first few weeks. What about the team in general? You know, the two LA games, the Utah game yesterday. Any impressions about what's good, what's bad, and you know, what we can do to turn this baby around?
Right. Well, the thing, you know, the Laker game was kind of a fun game to watch, and an observation there was listening to the TNT broadcast crew, and, you know, it's always interesting to me to hear some non-Chicago views of things, because I know how emotional and negative sometimes, you know, the Chicago-based fans and media can be, but it seemed like the tone I heard from Kevin Harlan and from Reggie Miller is, wow, there's some interesting pieces here. Noah had a little spring in his step in that game. Excuse me, not Noah. Rose, of course. Didn't mean Noah. But it looks like Rose is starting to get that spring and speed back a little bit, and they commented on that. So, you know, basically kind of what we've been saying, the Bulls roster is a pretty interesting roster, and there's some pieces you can definitely work with. The Clipper game concerned me just because they gave up so many three-point attempts, and that was – they kind of made the Clippers look like the Warriors in that game, right, where it was – a tight game into the third quarter, and then just so much three-point shooting. And it got me thinking about when the Clippers played in Chicago earlier this year and how many threes they hit. And we talked about it on the podcast, that, well, how many teams are they going to see that are going to shoot that many threes successfully? And, well, I guess the Bulls had a short memory because they didn't defend the three-point line very well in that game. I mean, 17 out of 32 threes, and obviously letting Jamal Crawford have way too much fun out there, in my view, it was a little concerning. So just kind of that, there didn't seem to be much of an adjustment, and just the team spirit really just kind of fizzled in that game where, you know, it just kind of slipped away without what I thought were enough adjustments or timeouts to stop things before they got out of hand. And it got out of hand in the game that they were seemingly playing neck and neck with the Clippers for a good part of it. And again, that's a Clipper team without Blake Griffin. So, and then last night against Utah, as we said, it's tough to play on the road at Utah anytime, but gosh, you just have to close it out. When you've got a 3-point lead in the last minute on the road and all you have to do is get a defensive rebound on a missed free throw, it seems simple. I know it took kind of a funky bounce and it was in Taj's hands for a second there, but you just can't let that happen. You know, the margin of error is so slim on the road. I guess the other thing that kind of bothered me a little is Rose wasn't having a good shooting game. Obviously, that was a nice three that he hit to give him that three-point lead. A wide-open three, though, that you should make that all the time. So to do that little bow, I'm more old school in that way. I'd rather he save it till the game is wrapped up and there's no time on the clock and the Bulls have the win sewn up. Then you can do your bows or whatever you want to do. So that was a little concerning as well.
Utah disrespected Derek by leaving him so wide open. I mean, there wasn't a defender within 5 feet of him. You know, and basically a final possession is not showing respect for, you know, what he brings to the table as far as his outside shooting. you know, probably rightly so. He's never been a great three-point shooter, but his credit, he hit it. I thought, you know, it's really tough for him. He had a bad shooting night, but he was still aggressive. I thought he played very well in the first half against the Clippers. I think his trajectory is up. He seems like he's playing better and better to me. And, you know, I'm looking forward to see how good he looks at the end of the, by the end of the season. But it's clear when you play a team like Utah and they're able to really kind of bring it in, if you don't have any three-point shooters to stretch the floor, that's going to be a tough game. And, you know, I think Derek will even play better as soon as we get done with you back to help bring out that three or two and really kind of stretch the floor. I think it'll be beneficial not just to him, but also to Jimmy. I did want to talk about, you know, Gasol. Everybody loves to rip on Gasol, and, you know, he was a big reason why we lost his pick-and-roll defense. Gasol, we were plus +7 with him on the floor. Taj, I believe, was like a negative -15. And people
right.
seem to ignore the fact that, you know, Pa in January, according to NBA.com, was the best rim defender, the best in the NBA in terms of guarding the basket, rim defense, kept his opponents to 39% shooting. No one was better. And so he does offer that. He does bring that to the table. But Taj, again, it's just ignored. It was basically a layup line without him there, too. I mean, it just seemed like he didn't do as good of a job guarding the pick and roll either. He didn't do a good job either, and that's what you got to expect from him. So kind of frustrating. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Right. Well, you know I'm a huge Powell fan, and really they've been getting pretty good production out of the big three, you know, Powell, Derek, and Jimmy. But these games they lose, it drops off pretty quickly after that. And so they need to get something, obviously, out of the rest of that lineup. Somebody's got to step up, a Brooks or Doug's got to go off a little bit. And, you know, and I mean go off, I mean, you know, have a 15 to 20 point game here and there to pick up the slack on those guys. Again, that national telecast on TNT with the Bulls at the Lakers, and, you know, there was a nice little tribute there with Kobe and Powell kind of having a little moment and remembering some Laker championships together. But you heard Reggie Miller. It was almost like a tribute to Powell. They were talking about what a versatile player he is and all the things that he does well. And yeah, but I've noticed on some of those DeAndre Jordan dunks and Gobert, you know, getting behind Powell last night, I know he's looking around like, where's my help? Right. And, you know, and I guess it's just up to him and up to Taj, but yeah, that he needs a little help against these young athletic guys. Gobert is one of them, right? He's an up and coming center, very active, very athletic. And your point about Rose being wide open, Utah is so meticulous on defensive details. You're probably right. That wasn't a coincidence or an accident that Rose was wide open. They were probably daring him to beat them with that shot. and thank goodness
exactly.
He did it.
I'd like your opinion on one thing. You know, everybody's asking for the Bulls to trade, rebuild. I don't believe in trading Gasol for 2 second-round picks. I think the chances, actually, the Bulls winning a title are greater than 2 second-round picks working out and being really meaningful parts of rotation. You know, for every Draymond Green, there's 60 Cameron Bairstows. So I'd like to get your opinion, though. There is one trade I do potentially see. I know some people might laugh, but I think Blake Griffin with his recent broken hand and situation with the trainer there, and the fact that the Clippers are playing so well without him, could it be potentially, could he be available? And I suggested, how about Gasol, Nico, maybe Taj, maybe some draft picks for Blake Griffin? That's a trade I look to make and build around Blake, you know, Rose and Jimmy, as Blake's only 26, 27. What do you think of that suggestion?
Well, that's an interesting possibility. If they can get someone with the star power of a Blake Griffin, you know, for that kind of package, I think that's interesting. You know, there has been talk about moving Griffin, I've noticed. But, you know, as I thought about the Bulls in the East, you know, unless I'm still one to give it a little more time and see what happens when Dunleavy comes back and Nico comes back with this group and see what happens. Because as I look at the East, I still could see the Bulls winning a playoff series against any of the teams that are in the top, eight seeds right now. Obviously Cleveland would be tough, but the Bulls are 2-0 against Cleveland this year. So when I think about that, now obviously getting through the East, and then if you get to the finals, it's going to be very, very tough with Golden State or San Antonio or even OKC, whoever comes out of there. Obviously Golden State looks like the favorite. So when I think about the Cavs being the only team really that I can't envision the Bulls beating in a playoff series, in a 7-game series out of the East, I'm thinking they stick with this group to see what happens when you get as healthy, obviously Noah's not coming back, but when you can get a healthy lineup with all the pieces like we talked about, Dunleavy and Nico in particular.
What about Clippers perspective? Do you think they would explore that trade, just suggesting Gasol's obviously still at a high level. I know, is he a good fit, right next to Jordan, but Gasol won a title next to Bynum, and far less skilled, far less talented probably than Jordan. What do you think?
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, I think that the Clippers are serious about chasing the title this year. They're going to have to do something dramatic like that because of those powerhouse teams ahead of them in the West. So if they're really intent on getting to the finals, and Chris Paul's window, I don't know how many more years he has, right, to play at the level he's playing. So there could be some interesting things in the works to make that move, looking at a limited window of time. That's an interesting thought in terms of, obviously Griffin and Gasol would be the key pieces, and the Bulls get a little younger. And that gives the Clippers, an asset to try to win right now. And
plus, I mean, to make the salaries work, you'd probably have to give up Taj, too. And Nico is obviously a good player. I don't think it makes the Clippers really – obviously, Griffin's a far better player, but you're still giving them something of value, even with maybe a pick, too. And is Griffin going to be back with a broken hand? That's probably a 2-month injury, so
right.
I don't know. I don't think it's as laughable as some people have found it to be.
Right. Well, and it would be hard to think of the Clippers doing something dramatic when they're doing so well right now, right? When they've, they've won 4 in a row, 7 out of 10, it just seemed to be having wonderful team chemistry. And again, now they'll have to integrate Blake back into it if they keep him and bring him back from the injury, which is, what they'll likely do. I think the other thing with LA star power, having someone like Blake Griffin is important in that LA market too. So winning is important, but also having that superstar, iconic guy, even though I think there's a little shine off of his stardom at the moment based on the off the court situation, with the punch. But one other quick thought before we wrap up on the Clippers and Jamal Crawford, and obviously Bulls fans know him quite well from his years with the Bulls, but he's part of one of my favorite all-time NBA trivia questions, which there's only been 4 players in the history of the league that have had 50-point games for 3 different teams. So, 3 different franchises, which is a great trivia question. So, spoiler alert, I'll give the answer, and if listeners want to pause it for a moment and think about it. But along with Jamal Crawford, who's one of those 4, the others are Will Chamberlain, Moses Malone, and Bernard King. So 50-point games with 3 different teams, 3 different franchises, which is a great trivia question, I think. So just wanted to throw that one in there as well.
Yeah, he's quite a scorer. I mean, you get handed to him, he gets hot. I mean, he's something else. That's why I don't feel as bad about the Clippers loss. I mean, he got hot. Bulls gonna lose. I don't care who's guarding him. Crawford's gonna score, and if you're not bringing it on the offensive end, you're gonna lose. And they weren't matching him, and game over. So it happens every once in a while. Would like to talk about the coaching carousel. I don't think we've discussed the departure. Have we had the discussion on the departure since last time on the show?
We haven't. Since we last recorded, the Blatt firing came along, which was certainly, I guess, not shocking, but I thought surprising in terms of the timing and the success that Blatt was having And again, pretty unprecedented in terms of a coach with the success that he's had, you know, even with whatever flaws were there. And I think Blatt has gotten somewhat of a bad rap in terms of, you know, I've heard some reporters and different people saying that he didn't play in the league and, you know, lacks credibility because of that. But there's a lot of good coaches that didn't play in the league. I mean, Thibodeau, Popovich, Budenholzer, Chuck Daly didn't play in the league, right? So does that cause him to not be a credible coach? So I thought it was a surprising move and an interesting win for the Bulls too, to beat the Cavs right after that change was made in Cleveland. That kind of took the wind out of the sails, at least initially. I know the Cavs have been winning since then, but, although I had a really tough game last night at Indiana, I watched quite a bit of that game, which again, like we've been saying all along, there's no easy wins typically in the league, especially on the road this year. But, yeah, that happened. And then of course, Hornacek in Phoenix was just fired, which I'm sort of surprised they just didn't do it at the time when they fired the other assistants, but, I guess they thought they'd give him a little more time and maybe just out of respect. We did talk about that a little bit in terms of keeping Hornacek, but now he's gone. And I know Byron Scott's been getting a lot of heat lately in the LA media market. Just even though the Lakers are not winning and not doing well, there's a lot of criticism for not developing D'Angelo Russell, just the team spirit, that they should be catching some teams, coming into LA, even if the Lakers are young and inexperienced, if they were playing with some heart and with some passion, they should be beating a Charlotte or some other teams like that are coming in. And so there's been some real criticism of Scott as well. And I still think one day Luke Walton will be the coach of the Lakers, but I think Luke's smart enough to wait a while to let the Lakers roster get a little better, let some of these young guys get a little more experienced, plus just ride the wave of the Magic and Golden State for another year or two. So, but I think it sometime in the not too distant future, you'll see Luke coaching the Lakers.
I'd love to hear your midseason awards. Tim, I know you're short on time. Do you have time to get those out?
Yeah, I'll run through them really quick. And one thing, I know it's a little controversial, but I really think that Luke Walton and David Blatt should be coaching the All-Star game. I think they both deserve it. I know it would be a little awkward in both cases, but and I don't want to hear anything about rules and, regulations for the All-Star game. Heck, Magic got to play in it, and he wasn't even an active player in the league. So I just feel like those two guys should be coaching the All-Star game for one thing. But, I'll run through these real quick before we wrap up. So my MVP at midseason, of course, is Curry. And really not anyone too close of a second on that. Rookie of the year, I've got Porzingis. Yeah, I've got him ahead of Karl-Anthony Towns just because the Knicks have been an improved team. And just thinking of all the expectations on Porzingis in that New York market and how well he's performed. And then kind of my draft surprise, even though he's not rookie of the year, but Miles Turner from Indiana. I remember when they drafted him at 11, I thought that was a little strange. I know he's a physical talent, big guy that's got some skills, but, 1 year at Texas, so Larry Bird or whoever the scouting team is there in Indiana, pretty impressive. My rookie bust is Willie Cauley-Stein. So at number 6, and I kind of predicted that was a little high for him, and it's tough to shine in Sacramento anyway. But that's who I have as my rookie bust. Most improved player, I've got C.J. McCollum, slightly ahead of Andre Drummond. Drummond's put up a number of 2020s, but again, maybe some of the fans don't see the Blazers and what they're doing out west, but C.J. McCollum's really playing nicely. As far as comeback player of the year, I've got Paul George. That's a pretty easy one. And then my all-star snub, I've got Damian Lillard. Again, when you think of what Portland's had to overcome when they lost Batum, Aldridge, and Wes Matthews all to free agency, and that Damian Lillard has got that team, and he's got some help, obviously, with McCollum and some other young players developing, but he's got them in one of the playoff spots. They're in the eighth spot right now. And so it would have been nice to see Lillard get some recognition with an all-star selection there. And then my coach of the year, even though he hasn't been credited with the wins, I've got Luke Walton, who's now obviously moved over another seat on the bench, and Steve Kerr's back in action. But just the fact that he was an interim coach and all those things with Golden State happened so beautifully, I really think he should get some recognition there. And then kind of for some of the same reasons I mentioned about Lillard's all-star snub, Terry Stotts, I think, needs some consideration. So I'm more for someone that, you know, because of circumstances has done exceptionally well, where I'm thinking of Luke Walton, or someone who the expectations for the team were pretty low and they've really overachieved. And that's why I think of Terry Stotts at Portland.
Tim, I can't thank you enough for providing the analysis, the knowledge, and really enjoyed the conversation, especially those midseason awards.
Yeah, and, you know, and just one other quick thought on the draft. You know, and I talked about, you know, my rookie of the year and draft bust and so on. And, you know, I think of players like Tyus Jones from Duke and Sam Decker from Wisconsin, which I know they were first-round picks, and they, you know, I guess their bank accounts look a lot better. But, you know, when is the last you've seen them in a game? They're playing in the D-League. I don't know. I just how bad could life have been in Durham or in Madison for another year or two with those guys playing for Coach K or for Bo Ryan? I just kind of feel for guys like that that maybe left a little too soon and are missing out on some great college basketball experiences.
Yeah, but, you know, I always kind of side with, you never know when a guy's going to get a knee injury or a career-ending injury. And, you know, if you're going to be a first-round pick, I'm a firm believer in you got to go for the money. You can always go back to school, but you can't get that cash. And, you know, why else do you go to school besides earn a living? So I kind of believe you should go if you're a first rounder.
Right. Yeah, and I understand that too. I guess I just, as a fan, and their enjoyment of playing basketball, you know, is probably, you know, maybe they'll come around and get some significant minutes on the team and you know, and develop into solid NBA players. But at the moment, they're missing in action.
Tim, thanks for coming on again. Great talking to you. All the best. We look forward to having you on again.
All right. Thanks, Fred. Talk soon.